Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater, committed to helping companies solve food. From employee meal plans to on-site staffing to concierge ordering support. With corporate accounts, nationwide restaurant coverage, and payment by invoice. EasyCater.com.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. All right, Allison, when did you hear about the eruption?
So I actually heard about it, would have been evening time here, mm-hmm. so only within a few hours of the eruption, because myself and my students were paying attention to Twitter, mm-hmm. and they announced the eruption before it was clear that there were people there.
Yeah.
So it was like 2 p.m. local time in New Zealand, mm-hmm. And we were aware of it, and then as we proceeded to try and find out more about the eruption is when so much more information came out.
Allison Grettinger is a volcanologist who specializes in volcanic eruptions that interact with water. That's the type of eruption that occurred in New Zealand last week when the volcano Whakaari, or White Island, erupted unexpectedly while people were touring the island. As of this recording, 16 people have died, and the police continue to search the island.
Well, it was... That it erupted was sort of surprising because I assigned my students volcanoes to babysit with the purpose of them understanding that some volcanoes erupt all the time, some erupt sort of by surprise. Mm-hmm. So we were just thinking about timing and how, you know, you don't anticipate these things, even if you know a volcano is active. And then, of course, when we found out people were there, my stomach dropped.
Yeah.
And I thought about a lot of my colleagues who work in New Zealand and probably how much more intense that feeling was for them and all the uncertainty. So there were a lot of emotions. I've been there myself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of emotions, yeah.
Today on the show, the science behind the Whakaari eruption. We'll talk about how scientists try to determine when volcanoes might erupt and whether or not anyone should take the risk of visiting an active volcano.
This message comes from NPR sponsor AT&T Business. With a voice as calm and soothing as Rainn Wilson's, it was inevitable he either worked for NPR or invented a talking pillow. He went with the pillow. Sleep with Rainn, powered by AT&T Business, featuring his voice, designed to help people sleep. Kinda brilliant. Even smarter? Launching a new business with AT&T Business's security, reliability, and expertise. Make your next-level ideas a reality with the only next-level network. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor American Express. Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4x points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4x points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor Osea. This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. They both come in giftable boxes with savings up to $46 and free shipping for a limited time. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
So you've been there. Tell me a little bit of what it, you know, kind of looks like. Describe it to me if you can.
Yeah, so I had taken one of the boat tours, and you arrive and you start walking up. It's not a steep terrain, but it is very wild. There's loose rocks, and there's sort of a tromped-down bit that changes depending on where it's safe to walk. And there's lots of little holes and things around the trail, and lots of steam vents, mm-hmm. and fumaroles. So fumaroles are where you get active volcanic gases are coming out from depth, and they can cover things in sulfur. So there's lots of bright colors and textures and crystals, and it is fascinating and very not... You're not at home when you're there.
Right.
You can tell you've walked into this sort of epic landscape.
Gotcha. So Let's talk about the specific eruption here. I think when most people think of volcanoes, they think, you know, like lava spewing out and that kind of stuff. Can you talk to me a little bit about this particular eruption?
Yeah. So White Island has what's called a hydrothermal system. So there's hot water moving through it. And so I mentioned all this sulfur and the degassing. So there's a heat source somewhere in there, right? So there's magma at depth and it's hot and it's heating the water above it and the gases are escaping. So when you make water hot, it can be liquid, but it could also turn into a gas. And you can have some bubbles and some water, or you can have larger amounts of gas relative to that. And gas takes up more space than water. So if you have changes in that system, you can build up pressure, and that pressure can be released in an explosion, because that's really all an explosion is a release of pressure. So a lot of eruptions that happen at White Island are related just to this more surficial part, and it doesn't even involve the magma at depth. The magma is providing the heat, but it's being brought up by water cycling through the system.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it kind of described as a volcanic pressure cooker. Do you feel like that's a fair representation of the volcano there?
Right. Yeah, anything that you trap pressure in at some point could fail. And that failure is just the release of energy. And in this case, it involves hot water and sulfur and rocks flying through the air in a tragic way.
Yeah. So GeoNet, an organization that tracks volcanic activity in New Zealand, called this eruption kind of small from a global perspective. They said it was also pretty short, just, you know, 1 or 2 minutes long. So obviously small and short eruptions can still cause a lot of damage, right?
Exactly. So if a volcano is going to do something very large, there tends to be, you have to move more rock to get the magma close to the surface. And that gives us a lot of information in the forms of ground shaking or deformation. But if you're only releasing a small amount of energy, you have less information. But that's still dangerous because those speeds can still occur. And if you're in proximity to the source, I mean, it doesn't matter how many people are there for it to be too many people when one of these happen.
Right, right. So let's talk about the issue of detection, because this island is monitored pretty closely for volcanic activity. Are there any real warning signs for this kind of eruption?
Well, there's always information happening at the volcano. We talk about this hydrothermal system. So we can look for rock shaking. We can look for changes in water chemistry, changes in gas chemistry. And one of the tricky parts of a volcano that's active like White Island is those systems, when they have normal behavior, is already complicated. There's just so much information in it. So when there's a change, that's what we're looking for. And frequently, you'll say, okay, the system has changed. This is different than what it's been like for the past few months. Let's raise the alert level. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily give you any information that tells you, well, is it going to do this for just a few days? Is it going to do this for a long time? Or is this a sign of something more? But the time element is not there for us,
right,
for the vast majority of these small eruptions. And that makes it difficult to anticipate when things might occur.
Yeah, I mean, the New Zealand government definitely has an alert system, and it was actually raised, you know, to level 2 on a scale from 0 to 5 a couple of weeks before. But, you know, I've been reading about that alert system, and they say an eruption can occur at any alert level. So I'm kind of confused about, like, how helpful that can really be as far as warning people about eruptions.
Sure. So volcanoes can have patterns. And frequently, we see patterns when we look at their behavior in past tense. So when you look back, hindsight's 2020 and
sure,
all of life, including volcanoes. But that doesn't mean the pattern will be identical every time. Mm-hmm. So we look for changes and adjust the alert level to say, well, there's some activity. There's something a bit different or a bit more energetic than we saw before. And volcanoes don't always go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They don't care about chronology.
Right.
They could go 1 to any level they want or back down, or 1 to 2 to 1 to 2 to 1 to 2 with no eruption for a long period of time.
Yeah.
We would like them to be more communicative in a nice chronological way.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been our experience at any volcano on the planet, that it's, you know, always doing what we want it to.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you've been doing this a long time, right? And one thing that you've told me is these are really difficult to predict, and this is part of the reason why so many people are doing active research. You know, we've had years and years of looking into how these things act, how we can best predict them, but it seems like we still don't have enough information to be really confident about predictions. Is that fair?
Sure. So we could think about like the lifespan of a volcano and how long they've been active. So White Island, as far as we can tell, has been active for 150,000 years.
Wow.
And we expect to understand it by having monitored it with these fancy geophysical equipment for only a matter of a few decades.
Right.
So it's asking a lot to have all the information from just a few years of study, because the lifespan's much more extensive than our usual scale. But
right.
we have to live in our time scale.
Right.
We need to be able to function in that. So we use what information we have, and we take advantage of every bit of information we can get and hope that the next time we can do better.
So, Allison, this active volcano has been a popular New Zealand tourist destination. You visited it as a tourist. Do you think that people should continue to visit active volcanoes?
It's a really difficult question, and it's an interesting one that I've thought about different times in my life in
right.
different ways. And I will never make the decision for other people, but it is one that should always be re-asked.
Mm-hmm.
So is our understanding to such a level that we can say definitely that that is never acceptable? As an educator, since I work in the university system and that's what enables me to do my science, I always want opportunities for people to experience this really cool planet we live on. And how do we do that and keep them safe? I don't think there's a concrete answer. And safety always needs to be the forefront of any decision making. So, yeah, that was a non-answer.
It was actually a wonderful answer, because I'm asking you an impossible question, which is real, like, kind of a butthead move. But I think it's an understandable non-answer, right? Because scientists want people to be interested and engaged and continue to learn about these natural phenomena. But they also really want them to be safe, too, right? So there's a balance there.
Yeah. Ideally, we would keep everyone safe all the time, but then we would never get into a car.
Yeah. Yeah. Allison Grettinger is an assistant professor in the Department of Geosciences at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Today's episode was produced by Rebecca Ramirez and edited by Viet Le. Emily Vaughn fact-checked this episode. You've been listening to Shortwave from NPR. I'm Maddie Sofia, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Greenlight. Want to teach your kids financial literacy? With Greenlight, kids and teens use a debit card of their own, while parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and savings in the app. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
On Wildcard, the new podcast from NPR, you'll hear people like comedian Jenny Slate reflect on their lives.
What is something you think about very differently today than you did 10 years ago?
Dressing, like not salad dressing. I've always loved it and I'll never stop. Dressing my body.
That's all part of the new game show Wildcard, only from NPR. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.